I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to our program. Our first guest today has emerged as a central figure in Flint's recovery from its crippling water emergency. Dr. Mark Edwards is the civil engineer and scholar who heads the Flint Water Team at Virginia Tech University. Edwards' work last fall analyzing lead in residents' water confirmed they'd been ingesting it at dangerous levels. This was after officials began sourcing the Flint River as the city's water supply and after state officials had denied there was a problem. A month ago, Dr. Edwards was hired by the city of Flint to oversee ongoing testing of Flint's water to help determine when it's safe to drink again. Yesterday, I sat down with Mark Edwards here at WKAR. I first asked him to describe what kind of work his team is currently doing.
We're really excited because we're potentially going to be repeating the August 2015 sampling that first revealed the extent of the lead in water problem throughout the city of Flint. And this was a collaboration with Flint residents that where they actually coordinated the sampling and we provided the kits, the funding, and the technical expertise, analytical support. And this is urgently needed right now because that sampling from August 2015 is the only legitimate indication of what lead levels were in Flint water during the time period that lead children were being exposed to too much lead, where neighborhoods were seeing incidents of elevated blood lead of 10% of the population or higher. So if we go back to those same houses now, we can do a point-by-point, home-by-home comparison of how much better things. And our hypothesis is that it's at least three, four times better. But we won't know until we execute the sampling plan.
What can you tell us as to when Flint's water will likely be safe to drink again?
You know, the loss of trust is so incredible here that there's actually a three-pronged approach designed to get at the question of whether Flint's water is safe. The first is to have the residents repeat their own sampling, which I hope they have faith in because they're collecting the bottles and we're coordinating it. MDEQ is also out there doing some very aggressive sampling as well, trying to get at the root cause of the problem, and they'll be doing sampling in homes using a protocol that we've approved. And the EPA is also doing the first legitimate lead and copper rule sampling that Flint has ever had, meaning you have to go identify these homes that have high-risk pipes, lead pipes, sample the right proportion of those, and if after that sampling is done, they're meeting federal standards, EPA will be able to say, well, you know, there's still lead in the water, of course there is, but at least Flint is getting the same lousy water the rest of us are, you know, in the country, and at least they're meeting federal standards. So I don't think it's going to be till all three of those complementary studies are done that anyone is going to be saying to stop use filters or bottled water. Even after those three things are done, the loss of trust is so profound. Some people in Flint will never drink tap water again, I'm sure of that. But I think this is a good starting point to try to, you know, just say it's as safe as other cities or not.
When are those three studies likely to conclude? How far into the future are we talking here?
We're planning to redo the August 2015 sampling of 271 homes starting in March 7th through 9th. And we think we'll have that sampling event done by early April.
I know you're speaking with Governor Snyder later this evening. Can you talk to us about your working relationship with the governor and other officials? How is this unfolding? What is it like?
It's really fascinating because when I got into this, I like many other people, thought the politicians would be to blame. And our Freedom of Information Act requests pointed in a different direction. It was really shocking. Each and every time politicians, whether they were Democratic or Republican, had reached out and tried to get answers about what was occurring in Flint, they were misled by the same core group of people, the very environmental policemen we pay to protect us to make sure federal laws are enforced in the U.S., and it's no secret these folks are at the MDEQ, or were at least. And in combination with Ms. Susan Hedman at EPA Region 5, who's the top environmental cop in the region, these four or five bad actors pretty much misled everybody about the safety of Flint's drinking water. So I was actually surprised when we started reading the Freedom of Information Act request emails that the politicians repeatedly, I thought, behaved appropriately, asked the right questions. But when the environmental policemen, the civil servants that we pay to protect us, are deceiving you and trying to cover up the fact that they weren't following the law, who's to blame? I would argue it's the civil servants who are paid to do this job. Now, certainly Mr. Walling and Mr. Schneider have taken their fair share of blame, maybe more than their fair share of blame. They've also are guilty of being overly trusting of these environmental policemen. But they've also apologized for what happened. And, you know, that really goes a long way to me. So I get the fact that some people are never going to accept that apology. I mean, if I had lived through this in Flint, maybe I could never do it either. But from my position in Blacksburg, reading the emails changed my opinion, about Mr. Schneider and Mr. Walling in particular. So I have a good working relationship.
For the better. You mean reading the emails made you feel better about Mayor Walling and Governor
Absolutely.
Schneider.
And, you know, anyone who we posted all the emails on our website. Of course, they're all throughout the press as well. They've been disseminated and people can make their draw their own judgments.
There are more to come. Interesting.
You just think you've seen the worst of it. And your jaw just hits the table every time there's a new tranche released.
I'm talking with Dr. Mark Edwards, who oversees ongoing testing of Flint water as the head of Virginia Tech's Flint water team. Are there Flint residents who are not drinking the water coming out of their faucets who could be drinking the water?
No one in Flint should be drinking the water. And that's a message I think that we can't say enough. Even if you've had your water tested and it came back zero lead, that
still shouldn't be drinking the water.
No, because we've tested homes that have measured low lead. And on one day, and then the next day you test it, there's a piece of lead that fell into the water, either from the rust layer of a lead pipe or a piece of lead solder. And so the issue here is that the way we sample for lead can't reveal all the hazards. And no one should be drinking Flint water now. They should be using bottled water or filters until we get these three complementary studies done that actually show at least you have the same protection that's afforded in other cities.
Let me turn that around. How many Flint residents are drinking the water?
Too many. We're getting calls from people who are going home to home, and they're seeing elderly people saying, well, this lead in water only affects children. No, that's not true. There's no safe level of lead exposure for anyone. We've also seen people who haven't heard about the problem yet. As incredible as that seems, they just didn't know that there's this emergency. And we also have people who had their water tested and it came back low and they think one test result that's low is safe. It's just not true. So it's just too many people are still drinking this water, and I don't know how else you can get the word out.
Are faucet filters generally working?
Oh my, yes. They're very, very effective. We have challenged those in our lab at Virginia Tech over the last decade. And if I was in Flint now, I would be using the NSF 53 certified filters without any concerns whatsoever. I would drink that water. I would give it to, if I had an infant with formula, I would make it up without hesitation.
Flint's water crisis has led to a number of recommendations for reforms coming from you and your team. Mm-hmm. A colleague of yours at Virginia Tech, Yana Lambrinidou, has said the public health community is, quote, doing tremendous damage, unquote, by failing to require testing for lead in drinking water when a child is lead poisoned. How big an oversight is that?
It's really just incredible. The Public Health Service in the United States has completely betrayed the trust of the American people when it comes to the lead and water issue. And that includes the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, who wrote falsified reports to cover up harm done from lead and water in 2004 in Washington, D.C. They view lead in water as a threat to their business model, which is largely based on mitigating lead paint risk. And they spend a lot of time just covering up harm done from lead in water. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
Why? Why has it been overlooked this way?
Because they want to claim that every child who's lead poisoned was poisoned from lead paint or lead dust, which is what they get their funding for. And bizarrely, any child poisoned from lead in water is viewed as a threat, and they work overtime to try to cover these problems up. Then you got the EPA, who, for the life of me, I do not understand why these people do not want to do their job. They will not enforce this 25-year-old law. They sit there as water companies have been cheating for the last decades. And Dr. Lonbrenadu and I have written white papers on all the way people have cheated and said to EPA, I mean, how can you just sit there and let people cheat and make lead in water look low when you sample it and it's high when people drink it? And I've even written and put in writing to EPA that, frankly, based on what I've seen, that they don't care about kids lead poisoned from drinking water. And also, if another Washington, D.C. happens, which is what happened in Flint, it's on them. It's blood on their hands because they allowed this cheating to occur. And then you've got water utilities who, again, are paid. All these people are just paid to do one job, and that's protect us from lead in drinking water. And they're failing miserably, and they do everything they can to cover it up. And it's just, I don't even know what to say. It's so frustrating, I could just scream sometimes.
Flint's situation has raised the topic of federal lead and copper rules. You and others are calling for changes that would toughen those standards. Why should those rules be toughened?
Well, honestly, the thing I'm calling for is to just enforce the existing law. I mean, that's the crazy
thing. That would be an improvement over what we've seen.
If we would have followed the law, the thousands of kids lead poisoning in Washington, D.C., the lead poisonings in Durham, the lead poisoning in Flint never would have happened. All of these steps have been added to, like, how you sample for lead to make it look like it's safe when it's not. I mean, this is how ludicrous it is. As National Guards people walk the streets of Flint and distribute bottled water and install lead filters on people's taps, EPA and MDQ have insisted that Flint has never exceeded the lead and copper rule. So I don't know how you could prove that what a joke this rule is, more so than that, that the city of Flint, with all its problems with lead and water, has never exceeded the lead and copper rule. And just in Congress 10 days ago, I mean, this is how frustrated the American people are. Congress actually passed a law that said if EPA knows that lead and water is high in a city, they have to tell people.
That was a breakthrough.
Yeah, that was progress.
We asked them.
We have to pass a law to get them to do their job and to be humans.
You and I are talking here on Thursday afternoon, and in just a bit, you're going to be giving an address entitled "How Jonathan Baldwin Turner Saved Flint, Michigan." For our listeners unable to make that address, who was Jonathan Baldwin Turner, and how did he save Flint?
He was an amazing professor at Illinois College back about 160 years ago, and he was speaking out at that time about two things. One is whether or not man had free will at all, contrary to the teaching of the church, and he also was against slavery. And this offended the sponsors, the rich Southerners who paid the bills of his university, and he would not be quiet. Of course, history has judged him to be correct on these issues, but it didn't change the fact that he was forced to leave his job. They actually burned his orchards, and he left the job he loved at the age of 45. He loved this job. He loved teaching. And it's probably one of the greatest things that's ever happened to education in America, because when he quit, he went on a crusade to form what he called people's universities, universities for the industrial class, universities for poor Americans. And of course, that's the land grant system that was brought into law by the Morrell Act. And had he not been sort of run out of town for his views, we would not have the land grant system in this country. So in today's talk, I'm going to talk about how I read his biography and how I was so inspired by his work that it gave me additional impetus to form the Flint Water Study team and do this science and the public good, which was the Flint Water Study.
How does one become so intrigued by corrosion in water that it ends up defining one's career the way it has yours? What is the spark that started this?
It all goes back to my desire to help people, to do science in the public good. And there were so many problems that people were having in their homes related to corrosion. Everything from leaks in their pipes to bacteria growing in their water heater to lead in drinking water. And I just started studying these, and no one else was interested, frankly, because there's no money in it. And we now know, of course, that this is where the real battle lies in terms of the public health battlefield of the next century. We've discovered that bacteria growing in your house, your water heaters, like Legionella, for example, that's killing more people than all the traditional sources of waterborne disease we've been fighting for centuries. And so this is, you wake up one day and you're just doing this as a hobby, just doing it out of like trying to help people. And all of a sudden you're realizing, wow, this is where people are dying. This is where people are getting sick from lead poisoning. And this is, frankly, where all the money is being spent by homeowners dealing with their plumbing problems. So I think it's like any other branch of science where you just are curious, you follow your heart, you put your blood, sweat, and tears into it, and every now and then you find yourself at the cutting edge of a new research area that you yourself created. It's been amazing. And I did it all with just normal people, just talking to them about their problems.
Let me go one level deeper, though, and ask you where the impulse to help people came from.
Well, you know, I think that's something that most students bring into science and engineering. They get into it, it's my observation, for very altruistic reasons. They not only want to have a good job, sure, that's there, that's it, but they also want to save the world. And I think as they go through our education system and our institutions, that this is beaten out of you. It's we teach people to be willfully blind, to be cynical, and to give up on their dreams. And so what I try to do through my teaching is to just have people remember who they are and to remember all the great reasons they wanted to become scientists and engineers. And in general, that was to do good, to use science and engineering to help the world. And it's very, very easy to wake up someday and actually be doing science and engineering that hurts people. I mean, we've seen an example of that in Flint, where scientists and engineers abused science, they were unethical, and a whole city paid the price. And so this is something we all have to be aware of.
Dr. Mark Edwards oversees ongoing testing of Flint water as the head of Virginia Tech's Flint water team. Thanks very much for making time for us today.
Thank you for having me.